Dr. D, thank you for joining me today. It's been a few years now that you and I have been in touch about the Grand Solar Minimum and the changes ahead and the preparations that we're both taking for our families. I really appreciate you taking the time today to have this conversation and finally share some of your thoughts and observations with folks. Do you want to start just by sharing, you know, a bit about your history, your story, and how you found out about the changes we're facing right now?
Oh, man, that's... Hi, by the way, Christian. Thanks for having me on. Let's see, from the beginning. I've been in medicine for a while. I worked in mostly in the emergency room for about 12 years, and I'm doing urgent care and some primary care as well. I live in Washington State, so on the West Coast, up north there. How did I come across the Grand Solar Minimum? Well, first of all, I think it was observation. I noticed a few things were not matching what I was being told on TV about global warming. And me, I used to live in the desert in central Washington State. And, you know, the more heat they preached, the less heat I saw. The winters were getting colder. More snow, and I saw kind of, because I've never been one to just believe what I've been being sold, you know, on main media. I know there's always agendas for this and that, and being a scientific man, you know, I'm curious, so did a little search here and there. It turns out, and I know that I probably should prepare these, I'm really bad with names, you'll find out throughout thing. But my wife, she graduated from Western University, and one of her teachers there in geology was actually one of the main guys, or one of the first guys that actually ever wrote a paper about it. So I came across that, and I thought that was interesting. And then a little Google here, and a little Google there, and next thing you know, I come across by ice and not by fire, and you know, it just kind of unraveled from there, listening you know, to you and others like Diamond and Adapt 2030 and people like that, and doing my own research, which led me to like, you know, moved from the big city into a bigger farm, you know. I'm 127 acres. I've been doing that now for just a little over a year, I guess. So we've been, you know, doing a lot of adaptation, you know, not just myself, but the whole family, and trying to get ready to be more self-sufficient. And we got a little orchard now. I'm building these, I don't know, masterpiece of a chicken coop that any human could probably live in. And then we've got some alpacas, and we've got some chickens that will occupy the coop. And we got a small garden still developing that's going to be more energy and money into it probably next year. But at the same time, I think I told you that as well, and we've been renovating the whole house and make it, you know, crazy efficient and ready for some colder weather. The family's been, you know, it's been demotions. The kids are used to live in a big city, and now they don't. But as the time went by, you know, everybody's pitching in and enjoying, and time again, they say, oh, it's much better. Now I get to drive tractors and things like that instead of just playing video games every day. So, you know, was good and healthier that way as well. And I changed my practice as well. It's a big difference between, you know, working medicine in the big city versus the country as well. So yeah. A lot of things are the same, and a lot of things are different. I don't know if you think that's enough of an intro. I'm running out of things to say.
No, that's fantastic. You and I both then have learned about this, and as a result have moved our families out of a city, which is just as extreme. You know, ripping away from your life is as extreme a change as I can imagine. So I want to get back to your family in a second, but just personally, how did this realization affect? I mean, obviously it was a significant thing to motivate that kind of a life change. I'm just wondering how it affected you.
Well, you know, I've always been a bit of, I don't surrender very easy. It's not in my nature. Mm-hmm. After reading a lot and researching a lot, I got a decent image of what's ahead, you know. Mm-hmm. No one can know 100% for sure, but I'm probably as up to date on the possibilities as anybody. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, you do it now or you cry later. And that was a big motivator. I wanted that's the ability, you know, if you wake up and things have changed and you're in a big city, then it's too late because you didn't have time to prepare and everybody else is in the same, you know, boat as you are. But here we've got more options. So that was a big motivator. The other thing was that this property we actually purchased belonged to the family for a long time. So we bought it from the estate so we'd stay in the family. So that was the other motivator there. But yeah, it's been radical. It's a different life altogether.
Yeah.
Healthier. And, you know, the kids are getting excited. We're starting to get the first eggs and the first vegetables and the first fruits and all of that stuff. Anytime there's a new thing, you know, it's exciting for them. So,
and you and your wife have been on the same page?
Yeah, she's more cautiously, you know, optimistic, but she can see the changes and she trusts my opinion in the matter. Obviously, all that's happened wouldn't have happened without her being, you know, at least on some level in the same page.
Yeah.
Does she listen to you daily? Probably not. But, you know, she likes to get the updates. And I get a lot of the stuff that I send you, actually, when I get something interesting and I'll send it to you. A lot of the times actually comes from her. She homeschools one of my sons. And so she's home most of the day. So when she comes across things that she thinks I should see or hear about, she'll forward it to me. And sometimes I forward it to you. So that's the way it kind of works.
Have you guys seen any of the canned food shortages up there?
We don't have much options as shopping places here. Mm-hmm. Where we live. So the places that we did, that we do frequent, I have seen a few things. Like it gets masked pretty well. Like sometimes one particular item is not missing, but you notice that instead of having, you know, three or four different brands, there's only one. Mm-hmm. For that one specific product. Some other times they're just downright empty. You know, I've seen that a few times. And the price escalation, and we've definitely seen that. Because I work in the city, I do a lot of the grocery shopping. Mm-hmm. In the last year or so. I mean, the escalation, I'm actually amazed that no one is talking about that. You know, gas goes up 10 cents and everybody's up on arms. And food is, if not double, I'll say pretty darn close to it. Not even because, you know, the packages are like half empty anyway.
So. Shrinkflation, yeah.
So, you know, every time. And it's funny because the kids are starting to catch up with stuff like that, even without me saying anything, you know. They get a bag of whatever and say, oh, it's like half empty, these guys. Or the other day we went on vacation to another location and we went to the supermarket and my son said, oh, look, you know, half the shelves are empty on that aisle and stuff like that. So they're paying attention, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not much of what you'd consider like your bunker and doomsday prepper by mm-hmm. no means, you know. I couldn't live in a box for starters. And so we prep in the sense of trying to be practical and learn new skills in try to, you know, get a little bit more independent every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, up until, I don't know, a year and a half ago, I barely even grabbed the power tool, and now I'm building stuff, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah. So. That's terrific. That's the kind of metamorphosis through which we all need to do right now and sort of return to our growing roots. While we're talking about your family, tell me more. You know, you're a dad, and a lot of us are parents, mm-hmm. and we're trying to mm-hmm. strike a balance, right? We're already, just as individuals, coping with something that's just immense. It's just huge. But also, we're trying on top of that at the same time to integrate that and then create some coherent, you know, worldview for our kids. How are you and your wife going about that?
Trying not to dramatize it or make it look, I don't even know the word, make it more, you know, gloomy than what it needs to be. They kind of have the general idea. But we try to approach it in the sense that while that's time, it's time to do to get ready, to learn skills, and it's time to have fun that we might not be able to have, you know, later on. So we'll try to let them learn, like they all ride horses, and beginning riding lessons, and we go camping, and we go trekking, and we go do whatever we can. As busy as I am as well at work, but every time that they think, or they letting getting a turn to, oh, maybe I'll never go to college, or maybe, you know, this will never happen for me, I try to boost them up and say, you know, it's not like humans didn't leap for this in the past, you know. we just need to make sure we do the best we can, and it's going to be all right, you know. It's just need to stick together and stay optimistic, and everything will pass. You know, who knows? Maybe he will go to college someday somewhere, and maybe he won't get as bad as we think it's going to get. But, you know, I always say it's better to have and not need than need and not have. So, but try to have it on a, you know, a glass half full, more of a perspective. I might not be as optimistic myself, but I try not to let that transpire very much. Yeah, so, but all of the kids are a story, and they kind of know. And like I said, you know, they look for signs themselves, even though it doesn't look like they are. Mm-hmm. And they suggest, or they volunteer that information to me every time they find something that they think is relevant. So I know that they're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. How old are yours?
Well, my daughter's going to be 16. One son just turned 11, and the other one's going to turn 9.
Okay.
In just a few weeks here.
So pretty spread out. Yeah, that's great. Okay, tell me about how you're preparing. You mentioned you're preparing the house. I'd love to hear about that.
Just we tore it all. I mean, we didn't tear it down, but we stripped all the walls, and we reinforced, you know, the structure of the house, and made sure that everything was as sound as it possibly can be, because, you know, the house has been, it's a generational thing, and it's been worked on over the years. And so, you know, we had a lot of work just for that, to make it as sound and strong and, as it could be. Then we've upgraded all the insulation, and even the roof pitch and the strength of the roof, you know. When the time came to put in and the support structure, we're thinking, well, which, you know, how much weight and all of that needs to be calculated in. So I referred to places that are much colder and get a lot more snow than we do, and see what they use or what they did. And so we kind of reflected that in our house. You know, we'd probably do just fine in northern Alaska, and we are, you know, in a much more temperate, at least for now, kind of climate. So we've made a conscious, you know, effort to, on everything that we're doing, that would make sense. You know, not just it looks pretty and it's nice, but, you know, they make sense.
Now, it's been pretty wet up there, right? How are you guys experiencing the changing conditions?
There was some really bad rains at the beginning of July. And so just in the first few days of July, it became the rainiest July ever. These guys that he's like in the Seattle news media, that is like a weatherman kind of guy that looks, you know, he makes his living of looking at the sky. He makes this comment at some point. They said, oh my goodness, you know, the sky doesn't look that weird. It looks just like Seattle sky, only like when it looks normally in October and it's July. And there were some things that I've been catching on a lack of luminosity and being like the darker spring, darker winter, things are starting to pile up slowly but surely. So, and I can see even in the growth of the things out here, up until July, we were still freezing in the mornings, you know, which is very unusual. You know, it'd still be in the low 30s. Even now, in the morning, it's just like at the turn of this last week, we start going above 40s in the morning. Would you believe it? It's subtle, but I hear here, there, and everywhere that people comment on it. So people are starting to catch on with it. And as we know, it'll be more accentuated as it goes along, so... One thing I noticed, though, even though the July it was kind of weird. So on our side of Washington, it's normally very temperate, you know, kind of English-ish kind of weather. And this has been, like, really erratic. We had really terrible snows that lasted for a long time. Normally you get a snow, we can get several inches, but then it melts down the next couple of days. Well, this year, not that. Like big snow followed by big snow, you know, several days disrupting everything. Then been really cold up until July, but it's extremely dry, which is unusual. So we got colder and drier, even though July, like I said, is kind of making a liar out of me because it was so rainy. But now we're back to the drought. I'm looking at my backyard and the grass looks yellowish, so... which normally is not the case, you know. I'm supposed to live in a rainforest kind of state, so I used to seeing too much brown or yellow.
Yeah, yeah. And so are you connected to other people up there, and what are they saying about that?
So I've got a few guys that are watching it. But, you know, one of the things, for the first year or so, I was so... I don't want to give the bad idea if I say obsessed, but I was so focused on learning as much as I could. And so I was, you know, listening to shows like yours, like every day. I'd go from you to Diamond, vice versa, you know, reach out. And but these last year or so, I kind of changed my attitude towards it. In the sense that, and I know that's going to sound kind of selfish because I'm just thinking about my family and myself, but I figured, you know, what else do I need to know? I know what's coming. What I need to focus on is on doing. So I haven't been following a lot of the stuff that goes on. Like every now and again, I listen to you because I get your updates, and sometimes you mention something that makes me curious to go and look, you know. But for the most part, I've just been focusing on the family and getting the farm ready. So, I went from listening to and looking every day to barely even looking. Just learning all I can now about the land, what I can plant, what I can't plant, you know, what it's good information in terms of... kind of funny that a friend of mine from the desert area that I used to live before, and we still keep in touch, and you know, he listens to your show too, by the way. He tried something without letting me know, but apparently he's doing really well. He planted a Mediterranean fig tree in the desert, And the weather is changing over there so much now that it's actually doing fantastic. You took me, send me a picture, and it was looking pretty good. So I'm making promise to send me a start. So, but that's kind of the connections, you know, trying to talk to local people that in a way going to be interacting no matter what happens, and try to learn from each other. I guess. So I'm still involved in it, but more on a local level, if that makes any sense.
It does. That's fantastic. And it's great to hear that this knowledge is, you know, that you follow that path from really looking deeply into this knowledge, to then allowing it to serve as a catalyst to that positive change and looking into how do we start doing, how do we start being better and working on these things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's been a lot of time to talk, but now is the time to do, or you're going to be talking and you're not going to like what you see. Yep. In a couple of years.
Tell me more. How else are you preparing your family?
You know, supplies and building supplies. It's not just food, water, and ammunition. Like, you know, we got those two plenty, but you know, education items, books, tools, things that I need on a day to day on the farm in order to be successful that I might not have access to later on. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I'm geared up for that. But yeah, you know, the usual stuff, you know, medical supplies, things like that. Mm-hmm. Information about medical care and things like that, because, you know, I might not be around forever. Mm-hmm. So trying to prepare them and prepare them mentally as well.
Is there an end state that will, you know, that you're reaching for that will feel good when you get there? Or is it just a, you know, a good faith effort, daily steps, try as you can?
You know, I think daily steps, and you know, it feels good every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I see my son helping me fix this or the other, or build this and the other, sons or my daughter or somebody that I see they're learning skills and that they wouldn't otherwise do in the big city. I mean, that gives me small victories all the way, but the biggest victories when and God forbid we ever need to be in a situation like we so often talk about, that they are ready and I can rely that, you know, no matter what happens, I know they can take care of themselves. So that would be my crowning moment, I guess.